goes out to Mum.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM and www.resonancefm.com on the net. And what were you saying about Mum?
This goes out to Mum, this first one. Look, I just want to say, Bonnie Greer, in volume one of her autobiography, has problems with Negro and cheered when Muhammad Ali said, "Where is Negro land?" Anyhow, it was O.V. White, Superintendent White, at Starlight Church of God in Christ. And he said when we had a radio program, he talked to a radio land. So, hi everyone in radio land.
Okay, and that's Bob Parks, our guest. Welcome back, Bob. Thanks for coming in again. Performance artist?
Yeah.
Usher?
Yeah. Well, let's stay with performance art and the movie. Can I lay a couple of things on you here?
Yeah, you're starring in a movie at the moment.
It's of my life. And Marcus
Head.
Marcus Werner Head.
The director.
Co-director with Nathaniel Mellors.
Right.
This program, by the way, is everyone in the movie, or a lot of the main people in the movie. We got their all-time favourite R&B soul tracks. That's what we've got.
Right.
So it's one from Mum.
So this week's program, we're going to talk about Malevich and rhythm and blues, aren't we?
Talk about Malevich, yeah.
And Malevich.
Malevich.
Who you're telling me is Polish and not Russian.
Polish lineage.
Okay, all right. Would he have liked rhythm and blues, do you think?
He was rhythm and blues. Before the word came out.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
Suprematist rhythm and blues. Then.
Post-suprematist, yeah.
Okay.
I can argue that case later. It's coming on to that. Yeah, because he overlaps Matisse, and I got something to say with that show on the 16th of July at the Tate Britain. Okay, I'll get on to all of that.
That's all right. Mm-hmm. So, tell us a bit about this film then. You've been a performance artist for, 40 years or so?
Yeah, 40, literally. I've had, actually, let me tell you something that happened with this book I got in your boss's shop. George Fullard, the sculpture of George Fullard.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a story, but anyway, here we go.
That's all right.
I was at Chelsea School of Art, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I threw myself into it, right? Got in there at seven in the morning. Covered myself in sweat 10 times, didn't blink for 8 hours on the life class, just threw myself totally into it. So they thought I was on drugs or something like that, I think.
Yeah.
But I was totally into the art. Anyhow, I wanted to do sculpture, and Fullard eventually took over from Henry Moore, who was at Chelsea School of Art, mm-hmm. where I did pre-dip. And at the interview, he just threw myself on the floor. It's like everything, I put my whole life into it. And anyhow, I cried. After that for 5 hours. I haven't cried since then. Anyhow, in his, this book on George Fuller, it's Assembling the Absurd, and it says about him, he says a number of things. Artists should record life. He was a manic depressive. He was a Marxist. But anyhow, what he said was the artist, of all things, has to have integrity. And so I thought back to that interview. And he was trying to goad me into sticking up for myself, and I wouldn't be led. I wasn't going to lower myself.
Yeah.
And I thought at that time that was the weakest decision I'd made in my life, which was to accept the art school system, basically, up to that point. I'd met Anton Ehrenzweig, son, hitchhiking in Europe, and he invited me around to see his dad before I started at Chelsea. And his dad said, say something stupid at the ICA and use Chelsea School of Art as a base. And so that's what I did. And I was into colour, but after that point, when I didn't get into Chelsea, I could have got in for painting, but I wanted to do sculpture. And that word integrity, I thought, one minute, I did show integrity there. That's why I showed. And that was the strongest decision of my life.
But looking back on it, do you think maybe you shouldn't have gone to art school at all?
Oh, no, I should have. No, absolutely. No, I'm an academic in that sense. I'm very...
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. No, no.
So you wouldn't want to be a complete outsider then?
No, I don't consider myself to be that. And
No,
that's... In fact, the review in Freeze magazine put me very much into the mainstream. It was a rave review, and I feel much more comfortable and appropriate. And it's true. No, I don't feel in any sense an outsider in that sense, no.
And there's a trailer for the movie, isn't there, on Vimeo?
Well, no, actually, I've moved my Tumblr site now. It's www.robertparks.co.uk. I've got a website now.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, but you can just get it. If you Google the R&B feeling, it comes up there too.
Okay, okay. But you're sort of vaudeville... performance artist. It's like Chris Burden meets Max Miller or something.
Okay, I've got something to say about that too. So this is John Duncan, who... hi, John. He's listening in Bologna.
Okay.
Yeah. And
so various people on the film... they've each selected.
They put cast. They've put
selected
choices,
a rhythm and blues track for us to play today. We might get through them. I don't know.
Right. Let me just say a couple of things. Head of art at BBC, who they've co-commissioned to co-producing the film, said, looking at the rough cut with Marcus, said that it was an award-winning film.
Oh, right.
And they've got a new director actually for a fresh pair of eyes. Johnny, I've got a request. I'm going to pay for you, man. Also, John, when he was interviewed, said that who was in that whole, he had Cross Radio and sex with the dead woman. He had sex with the dead woman as a part of his performance art in out of a lot of things that happened. It's another long story.
Jimmy Savile recently, you've heard about this.
Necrophilia, yeah.
Okay.
Oh. Okay. Anyhow, John said that I was crazier than the craziest person in LA at that time. And this includes like Chris Burden and Paul McCartney and that, which I mean is honour indeed. Because everyone at that point, and I just seen Chris Paul McCartney sing at the show at the Tape.
Is it Paul McCartney?
Yeah.
Not
Cartney.
So people Cartney, don't, just to make sure we're singer, not. It's not a lisp.
No. Right. Anyhow, Paul McCartney, I've just seen this. I can't remember.
You were crazier than both of them.
Both. Well, is that
you are?
Yeah, yeah. Anyhow, because they were trying to, form things where I was still trying to open things up. They were trying to sort of close things down at that point.
Yeah.
So there you go. And I'm still. So this is. I'll read out my poem.
Okay.
Abstract literalism. This is a take on abstract expressionism. And the artists I mentioned, John Mason, Bilyard Bengston, and John Baldessari, are all West Coast artists. John Mason, they all studied under Volkers, who was a potter who did sort of figurative, they sort of became enormous things. And John Mason did his first abstract expressionist ceramics at the same time that Pollock, and Bilyard Bengston was a hippie. It's one great photo of him going, "Who's a bougie boy?" to Andy Warhol at the show.
Right.
And John Baldessari, the conceptual artist. So I'm referring them. Anyhow, class. Stephen Cohen told me an artist ranges between a tarmac spreader and a watchmaker. Here I am with my dead mum, armed with a scalpel for fine work and a sledgehammer. What babaloo wobble on bamboo? Now to set it in resin. At a forum, John Mason, Bilyard Bengston and John Baldessari defined art as having fun. Okay, let's play My Brother Tom, His Choice, Duke of Earl. You ready?
I hope so.
Oh, we hope so. Here we go, the Duke of Earl. There you go. Duke of Earl, Duke of Earl, Duke of Earl, Duke of Earl,
Duke of Earl. As I walk through this world, nothing can stop the Duke of Earl. And you are my girl, and no one can hurt you. Oh no, yes I Duchess, Duchess of Earl. We all walk through my dukedom, and a paradise we will share. Yes,
I was working on the rabbit hutch. Well, Dad got some 2B1 from Southall Market. And after that, I had the flu. And Tom went round to Southall Market and he got Duke of Earl from it. So thanks, Tom, for that.
So Tom's your brother?
Yeah, he's in Australia.
Right. Is he listening?
Probably not. It's about 6 a.m, but he'll catch it on your archive later, perhaps. But Tom, hello.
So that's his request.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Brother Tom, he's in the movie.
Is he?
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
Yeah, credited. Yeah. Next is Miriam.
There was a scene cut from the movie, wasn't there?
The bit that they didn't want to show.
Yes.
The orgasm.
Can we? Is that what it is? Who decided it should be cut?
Well, I think Marcus said that they wouldn't show it on the BBC. And what was the point of it? I was going to have an orgasm into mum's ashes and make a cross on my forehead as a final
with the mixture.
Happening. With the mixture from the air.
Right.
And I can't do it now because I did something else with the things. And I can't do it in this poem that I've written. So it's a hypothetical poem.
But did you actually do this thing?
No, I did something else with the...
I see, so they said, because they said it couldn't be filmed, does it?
Yeah, they wanted me to do a performance for the end, so that's what I came up with.
And was this some sort of ritual or something?
Yeah, ritual. And so what I did instead, we went on Hollywood Boulevard and there was this Indian shop, you know, Indian, Roman Catholic, with all the charms and all that kind of stuff. And,
yeah.
Anyhow, they said I can bake, because Mexican... my mum's ashes in bread.
Right.
So I baked them in the shape of a cross and put them on a tempera board and had these chromatic sequence coming out, and I had it on a Russian, like a banner. We took it up. We found this area. I don't want to say too much about the movie because this is the climax. But anyway, we found out that it wasn't Lincoln. I can't remember where it was. Anyhow, it was overlooking the whole of East LA, gangland.
Yeah.
And I was waiting for a drive-by, I tell you. Anyhow, there was nothing there. There was just wasteland. And it was a 360-degree panorama of the whole of Los Angeles area.
Yeah.
And I took my clothes off and poured colour paint, you know, the usual stuff. So that was, but it worked pretty well. I thought it was better than perhaps what I'd intended to do. So I was quite pleased with that.
So you took the ashes with you from England?
Yeah, we popped them in the bread. And actually, they're in the attic at Starlight Church of God in Christ. And Nathaniel said he wouldn't mind taking them when he gets the studio space arranged.
Was it a problem getting the ashes through customs or
not? Didn't tell him.
You didn't? Fine. Right.
No problem.
No. So what were they in? An urn?
Yeah, green.
And you
on
just
a violet
kind of
bag.
Mixed it. I mean, had they said...
We had a whole filming sequence mixing the baking the bread.
Right.
What's it, Galloping Gourmet?
And in the trailer, there's a clip where your mother says she's looking forward to death.
Well, she's got it, isn't it?
Exactly. But... You were driving the car, weren't you, when the accident happened?
Mm. Well, I killed mum. It's in the film. I don't want to give too much away from the film because
But do you think that she was looking forward to death? So,
well, you're not looking forward to it, but...
Well, she says that, doesn't she?
In an existential way. I mean, her thoughts are as a consequence of her suffering throughout her years, you know, the way that women from those generations were put down, and their consciousness is as a consequence of all the civility that they have to accompany. So I don't think she was totally liberated as a person, but I think she was starting to touch the cusp of it. But yeah, within that context, yeah, she was looking. It's a terrifically moving part of the film, actually.
So you don't feel that you were assisting her in this?
I was. It's a way, it's like automatic art. It's the same thing that happened. I just tell you this other story, because I want to get on to Malevich, but we'll get there, man.
Yeah.
Is the thing, I had done this diptych, which I got the double glaze in. You know, Dad got this scam thing in, double glazed the whole bungalow, you know.
Right.
The dentist, local dentist was working on it, right? They all appear out of the ether, you know. And so he died, and then so Mum died. So, right, get rid of the double glazing. So... Kandinsky Bavarian glass painting. I did two quick paintings on the other side, on one side, and I got the images. Really good, actually.
Right.
And then I got a compound car filler that I made the frame nice and smooth.
Yeah.
And what signifies, Mum, is this chromatic sequence that's, you know, just through yellow through green. You know.
Right.
So I'd got these from the show I had in Birmingham. I'd got a whole bunch of acrylics. And it was only over about an inch. I had to get the whole chromatic sequence, you see.
Yeah.
Very good. I had one on the kitchen table in the main room, and this great big easel I'd had supporting the other one, which was really good. I had a little photograph of Mum. It was like a coming through from everlasting life kind of thing.
Right.
And I had it all worked out, and I got syringes, because I thought if I put them in syringes, draw them up, I can get a thin Skane and do the stuff that way. Anyhow, when I come back for a couple of days, the whole thing had fell down, smashed.
Yeah.
And this is a similar thing that happened with Mum, you know, driving the car.
Yeah.
She wanted to die because she was too old. You know, she was 93 and, you know, the way people say those things.
Yes.
So it was almost God works in the funny kind of way.
Yeah.
So it's one of these things that you can't plan, but it's one of these things that happened. I just dropped off. It was like the magistrate's hearing said it was exonerated me. It was just like a bizarre. But this is... I did automatic art when I was at, like, at art school, which is like self-destructive art. There was an aspect of that. I did like fill whole walls with writing. And then when I invited people in, heavy with oil paint, the whole thing collapsed and they moved over. It was just that literal 30 seconds that they were in that it coincided with. So there's something subconscious there.
Yeah.
And similarly, this poem that I wrote triggered off, I don't know, but my thinking and planning, the thing would fall down, although I hadn't planned it. That's the last thing I want, because I love these stupid things, you know, the dramatic things. But that then gave me the idea, wow, I'm, you know, here I am 67 now with my birthday a couple of days ago. I'm back at art school. And here we are when I was with Miriam, because they flew us out for the movie because we were co-produced by the BBC.
Miriam, your first wife.
Only wife.
Right.
First wife.
First and last wife.
Well, who knows last, but first.
Yeah,
flew us out to LA and had a car and motel room and everything and driving around. We just went into this, it was a coffee bar, Cholo. And Miriam said, like, it was like we were back again when you took off, you know, back in 74.
Yeah.
And this is 50 years ago, 40 years ago.
Mm.
So literally I've had 40 years of accidy or gestation with my art. And it's as though now I'm starting up where I left off then.
Right.
With this 40 years in between.
Yeah.
So it's... right, let me play a track for Miriam here. We'll do a little bit of talking. Stevie Wonder. Miriam, I can only pick one.
The choice of
Miriam,
your wife.
Yeah, well, she was like when we got married in 72 to 73, 74, she was like the because she took part in the first love-in in Griffiths Park in 68.
Hmm.
And she was like her parents were born in Puerto Rico and then they moved to New York in the Second World War and then out to the West Coast when she was nine. She was born in the Bronx, I think, and then when she grew up in Hollywood, and that's where I went to. When we got married. So anyhow, she was the West Coast of America side of R&B, and I was like the English side of R&B. So we were, that was the tradition that we kept through.
Right.
So Rhythm and Blues, the definition for me is English R&B, American gospel, black gospel, and Latin American. When those three elements
did
come
you
together.
Contact all of these people? You contacted her recently and said, you know, which track do you want to choose?
Yeah.
So you're still on good terms with her?
Yeah. She came out, and I phone her most days now.
Oh right.
Yeah.
Okay.
It might. You
How
know.
Long were you together then?
about a year and a half, 2 years in England, and then about a year and a half in America, and then she took off for San Jose.
Okay, yeah.
No. Wherever it is. It's in New Mexico. Yeah. Okay. It's Santa Fe, yeah. Right. It's San Jose. I was thinking of the
Yeah, yeah. All right.
Yeah, so that's that. Right, let's get into another track at this point. Can I just play, because it's a feeling. I just place a taste of it, man. This track was playing all the time. I know you're sick of this one. Pharrell Williams, can you find it? Happy?
Which one is it?
Happy, Pharrell Williams.
Oh, Pharrell Williams. Yeah, we've got that somewhere.
Right, we'll try and find it. Because it was playing all the time. I just play a little bit of it, just a taste of it, because it was, I don't know, it just takes me back to the time. Here we go.
It might seem crazy what I'm about to say.
To get a taste of that. I just want to get a taste of that. Let me just say, well, I've got one more thing on my mind before I get into Maleovich.
Well, who was Pharrell Williams? What's that track? Did somebody choose that one, or is that one of yours?
That's me. That's my one. That was when I was in LA this time.
Yeah.
It was playing on the equivalent, whatever this equivalent of KGFJ, K-Day is now, on the Soul Station. It was playing all the time on the track.
Oh, right. So it's a newish track.
Oh, it was number one over here in England for a long time.
Was it?
A big hit over here, yeah.
Really? I've never heard of it.
Oh, you've never heard of it? Oh, you should play more of it, man.
I'm completely out of touch with pop.
Oh, yeah, silly. No, it's a big, it's been a massive hit in England, and everyone be sick of it who's heard of it.
All right.
Let me get this other one out from my mind. Okay,
yeah.
It's about sublimation. I read this book. I was going to the Freud Museum to see an installation there, and I passed this book of, I forget what the bookshop was. Anyhow, there was a thing on sublimation, and having read that desublimation was the big 20th century philosophical or psychoanalytical impact, and that had influenced Lacan and co, whoever introduced it, i.e. that freeing up the libido and bringing in popular culture through that one, and sort of anti-Louise Bourgeois and all that kind of stuff. And the woman who wrote the book on sublimation, the psychoanalyst, said that it's absolutely out now in psychoanalytic terms, because with today, with instant gratification through the internet and all that kind of stuff, that the process of sublimation has sort of become passé almost. But you've got to work for it to bring it back. And I'm a big adherent of... can I say something really sexist here? Maybe not.
I don't know. We should have rehearsed it. I don't know what
we never rehearse anything.
I don't know what you're going to say, do I?
Okay.
It's up to be it on your own head.
All right, on my own head.
Criticism and brickbats can go. They're coming.
I'm going to get them. I tell you, like mad for this one.
Go on.
It's true. It's my own feeling. So it's not true, because it's true. So it's relative and all that.
Yeah.
40 years ago, sitting in a bus, and I'm sort of too shy to look at women, but occasionally I'd look at them and something like that, and then cherish an idea. And now I'm on a bus and someone will get a mobile phone out, what am I, baby? And my whole image of the has been blown of my romantic conception. So what I'm saying is that with aspects of technology, go by Delina, the Sophia, the Russian composer, said that the subconscious mind 20,000 years ago, instinct, dominated mankind, and over the subsequent years, the conscious mind has come in, and the intellect, they call it, over the centuries, and the role of the artist is to make that bridge between the subconscious and the conscious mind.
Right.
And now, because of the internet, that thinking is going out. People are having machines do the thinking. So it's this whole process. We have to retrieve something of the ability to reflect on things and that particular pleasure that it gives. Okay, I just wanted to get
Have we passed the sexist bit?
That's it. That was the sexiest bit.
Well,
that's wasn't
very
too bad.
Subtle. That's all right.
All right. Okay. Cool. Okay. Right. Let's play it. Can I play now the main things? Like, this is my main man. The two co-directors, their choices. Yeah. Number one, Marcus Werner Head. This, I mean, everyone would.
Which track is it?
Well, I'll tell you in a minute.
All right.
It's everyone would say this is the, you know, most soul. People say this is the number one soul record of all time. Yeah. At the Dark End of the Street.
Oh, yes. Right.
A lot of people's choices. Can you line that up?
Yeah, that's number three then, I think.
Okay, number three.
James Carr, yeah?
James Carr. Here you go. Sit back.
At the dark end of the street, that's where we always meet. Hiding
Right, so that was James Carr.
Right, now I want to do both now because they're co-directors. So the second one is out to Nathaniel. Nathaniel Mellors. Love, Nathaniel. Listen in. We're going to play your track now. The Jerry Washington. You got that lined up?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is.
So we're just launched straight. We'll
look straight into it, then we can get into some.
Into Malevich.
Yeah.
He's there somewhere, isn't he?
He's here. It's all books here that I've.
Looking fine.
Look like you're doing fine yourself.
Thank you. Listen, are you traveling light tonight?
Yes.
You are? Very good. Listen, baby, I was told to ask for what you want. I see what I want, and I want what I see. Are you any kin to the Bertha family?
No.
You're not? Oh, baby. You sure could have fooled me. You look like you're some cousin or some relative of theirs. Listen, baby. Luther Ingram recorded a song saying, if loving you is wrong, I don't want to do right. But baby, looking at you, a man can't help but want to do some wrong. Looking at you, I want to do a little wrong myself before the sun come up.
What you want to do?
What I want to do? Oh, baby, you shouldn't ask me that. This is what I want to do if you don't mind. I want to love you, right or wrong.
want. But I know, I'm just what you need. If you let me love you tonight, love you and hold you tight.
So that was Jerry Washington. Whose selection was that?
That's the other co-director. That's Nathaniel Mellors.
Who's an artist who...
It's a long story. Through Robin Klasnick, he was his artist at Matt's.
Matt's Gallery in the East End.
Yeah, and when I was at Leicester College of Art, Robin was in the year above me, same age, and I bumped into him in London. And then... down in the New Forest, where my mum and dad moved into Sway, my brother's girlfriend, Linda, Tom had a nervous breakdown and ended up in mental hospital with an abortion that I helped with.
You helped with the abortion?
When I was 14.
Right.
I'd not set it up and everything. And it's a long story. I won't go into that. Clive Cornish's house. But anyhow, then Linda was a girlfriend who made a mental hospital in Isleworth. And she taught art. And lo and behold, when I was a postman in Sway, I knocked on this door. I know that woman. That was Linda. Yeah. Anyhow, she was teaching at a local comprehensive in New Milton. Mm. And they'd given me a year out of my course at London University in teacher training. Yeah. So I had to take a year in the middle. And I came back and got my qualification. And that's another love story when I got scapegoated as a teacher for 20 years. But anyhow, we won't go into that right now. But Linda... took me on as artist in residence for a while, and then she retired and raised half a million pounds from the National Lottery and opened Art Sway. She's a Trotskyist and I'm a Stalinist, so we didn't get on too well politically, but it was a national, international and local level. Mm. Now, she got me a show there out of pleading, you know, even after 4 years or 3 years. Yeah. And anyhow, as by coincidence, Robin had made a connection with Art Sway, and one of his artists was Nathaniel, who had a show at Art Sway. And anyhow, as I studied method acting, they took pity on me because he was doing some filming, put him in it. So here I was up a tree. Nathaniel, I had come round to my place to see my stuff, and he came round and he was blown away by it. Gave me his gallerist in Amsterdam, producer, Gatefold LP. And subsequently, he directed the movie. It's his initiative and so on. It's a long story. That's the connection.
Okay. Yeah. You're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4
And one last thing before
FM.
We get...
Sorry. And today's guest is Bob Parks, who's talking about his film and Malevich.
All right.
And that record you mentioned, that you have a record out, the R&B Feeling on Junior Aspirin Records.
That's Nathaniel's record label.
Hear your music.
Mm-hmm. Google it and you can get the Junior Aspirin Records. Okay.
Absolutely.
Now, I just want to stick up for Russia a little bit, although the British folk art show at the Tate is putting a shout in for our own tradition, because that's what happened in Russia, where Malevich looked at Shukin had a big collection of Matisse and Picasso in Moscow, so a lot of the avant-garde saw it, and Malevich saw it, and he said, sensorially, the French are terrific, but they lack spirituality. And I think it was Ambranstevo, there's an art colony with various people, they built the church on a folk base. Anyhow, from Repin to Malevich, I think it was 14 years, you went from realistic art to abstraction, the Black Square. Literally, I mean, it's a wickedly quick story and path to take. Senior moment.
That's all right. Forgot.
Where am I?
So, I'm beginning to wonder where we are. Actually.
Okay, all right. Okay, I want to stick up. I want to shout for Russian culture. Just two things.
Well, just to wheel back a bit, you said you were a Stalinist, or are you still a Stalinist?
Well, I've never found, no one's disputed the fact, what the ideology is, that communism was designed, Marxism was designed for proletarian society, and the only places it's been given a chance have been in agrarian economies. And Lenin, as it was an agrarian, the only thing he could do was revisionism. And Stalin was a revisionist exemplar, killing off the middle class, or the upper working class, the kulaks, in order to revise. So in that sense, he was a true Marxist, in as much as working class cultures never had a chance. It was a wonderful experiment that failed dismally, but it's our only chance as working class people to make a statement.
But I remember we sort of fell out slightly on this issue in Birmingham, because I remember you were talking quite defensively about Pol Pot, and I thought, actually, this is a bit. I mean, we're talking about defending a kind of ruthless. We're talking about politics, which is utterly ruthless and will stop at nothing and will kill people in order to achieve.
Well, Pol Pot was at the Sorbonne studying phenomenology in the early 50s. Well, and the Stalinist, the French Communist Party is traditionally Stalinist. And if you like, they infiltrated certain ideologies. And that is to do with the impact of Western culture on Eastern culture. I mean, the big influences, the impacts have been on Eastern culture, on Europe, which gave rise to ambiguity and the developments in physics, and of African culture, on American culture, which gave the spirit of improvisation. When it goes back the other way, all sort of bad things happen, which is what happened. For example, the Kennedy or whoever it was in Vietnam and all that. And so on. Monstrosities happen because they don't. Basically, the Oriental idea has a bit of an inkling into Western, but West has not a clue about ambiguity culturally. They're older civilizations, anyhow. So when it goes the other way, it gets upended. And this was as a consequence of that misunderstanding that had been imposed. It's more than this. Okay. So that's a bit of it. That's just the tip of the iceberg. But Leo, I want to just say a couple of things, because I started out in South Atlanticus in the 13, you know, we formed a group, and I said, well, you can't have a group because it's against the principle. But I got his book on Kropotkin. I'm sort of, he said that, because he lived in England most of his life, actually, of all of them, I kind of like him. The vitriolic statement is Marx's reply to Proudhon, who wrote the philosophy of poverty, and his reply was the poverty of philosophy, right. Which was I've never read such a vitriolic piece of writing, because it's fantastic. Anyway, but Kropotkin says how they're bedfellows, anarchism and communism, and it likens it. They're both interdependent, actually, and likens it with Christian theology, Christ, the whole thing. It's all communist, you know, from one point of view or other, the idea of equality over the idea of free, so on. Anyhow, so there's that. And what he sticks up for is the idea of folk mores. So to stick up with natural relationships between people, not imposed by systems, not imposed by governments, not by orders, but the, you know, natural pathways. This is a human instinct, which is a wonderful thing. Because the argument is, if you're an anarchist, why can't everyone steal everything you've got? And he said, well, basically, because everyone's moral, you know, and, you know, we're human beings. We have to exist as moral beings, so that you'll be breaking your own morality to do that. So you just trust people, basically, and people function very well. So I kind of liked his. And then just one other thing, there was the Moscow's Most Soviet State Academic Theatre was on at the Wyndham Theatre. April through May with three sisters and Uncle Vanya. I got to be right at the front. Man, I have never seen. Their instruments were totally open because I studied with Lee Strasberg. I studied method acting in 76, 77. Mm-hmm. And complete relaxation. It made look like movie actors and English actors look wooden.
Really?
And it's ensemble mm-hmm. acting where everyone's acting, not just everyone's frozen and the mm-hmm. person doing it, but everyone. And so the action comes mm-hmm. out of what's happening on stage. Life yeah. is happening. And it comes in with what old George Fraser...
Is this on at the moment, or is this something...
No, it's gone. It's gone. Been and gone. Not too many people went to see it.
All right.
Okay, I just wanted to put that out, man. Okay, yep. Can I get one more track out of the way that we get solidly into the thing?
Sure.
Let me play John Duncan's one. Yeah. Johnny, I'm going to try and get yours in if I can. This is Dinah Washington, this Bitter Earth.
All right. Keep talking. I've got to...
Okay, he's got to find it. Yeah. Right, this is what Malevich is. This book by... Patricia Railing, I had 11 and a half hours around the show in Amsterdam at the Stedelijk.
Right.
And it's coming over here on the 16th, and it's going to... Here we go.
This bitter earth, well, what fruit it bears, what good is love, that no one shares, and if my life is like the dust, ooh, that hides the glow of a rose. What good am I? Heaven only knows. While a voice within me cries, I'm sure someone may answer my call, and this bitter earth, ooh, may not, oh, be so bitter.
Nitty gritty time now.
So that was Dinah Washington.
Yeah.
This Bitter Earth. Whose request was that?
John Duncan. He was, that was the only contact I had with the art community in Los Angeles. And Barbara T. Smith.
Okay.
Which actually turned out to be quite influential areas.
So. We were going to play one track chosen by the editor, but apparently he's been sacked.
Yes, but no, he's good. What he did was brilliant work, man. And he's laid the foundation. We'll play it on the way out if we get time. Johnny, we're going to do it if we can, man. I just want to say about Malevich and then... Okay, is that all right?
Absolutely.
Okay, here we go. Right, this is the main thing. Now, this is this book.
And we should say that there's a big Malevich exhibition
16th of
up,
July.
Tate Modern.
Overlapping by 3 weeks, Matisse.
Uh-huh.
And they'll miss it. The critics will miss it over here. Believe me, they'll miss it.
Yeah.
But he's the greater artist. Now, I'm ducking, but... this is what he says about spirituality. So this is this book. I had 11 and a half hours around the show, this show, in Amsterdam. And this book came out with the show, Patricia Railing, Malevich Paints the Seeing Eye. And apparently it's the first book on his procedure, his process. No one's ever written a book about, explored it before. Hmm. And his theory was Hermann von Helmholtz. He was an American, German scientist, the last... the end of the 19th century, actually he followed him to the T the whole way through. One of his things was, it's the shape of the cornea, mm-hmm. or no, the curved bit, and it does that to the vision. It curves it, right? Okay. And he painted literally to the what literally we see. He was the first artist in history. This is, I mean, he's radically different to any artist up to now. I mean, it's never come out. And the one area he overlaps with cubism was sense perception, but what he was unique with was sensation, light and colour as pure sensation. That was the first aspect of his art. The second aspect is sensation as a result of mental activity stimulated by sensation. So that's, you know, Picasso and co., even Cezanne to a degree, it was the mental activity, it was what you do then with what you receive, because, I mean, Picasso didn't work too much from nature. It was mainly conceptual, his stuff, from that point of view. So, but he combined the two. He combined sensation with... This is very, very quickly. I'm getting down to this. And then the next thing I want to talk about, the next book...
Can I briefly say, what do you think about Stalin's attitude to art? Because Stalin suppressed Malevich totally, didn't he? I mean, Malevich and that all that kind of art was actually kept under wraps for decades because it didn't fit the socialist realist.
I don't think it's all emerged yet. Certainly, socialist realism was the brainchild of Malevich, and that's a categorical statement of truth. Uh-huh. It came from Malevich.
Right,
but it's a long argument. Yeah, this whole one.
All right,
and it's fundamental. There are. I think aesthetically, not. I mean, obviously not. I'm a pacifist. I wouldn't advocate any killing of anyone. You know, literally. But there's a certain mileage in Boris Groys wrote a book, The Total Art of Stalin, where he plasticized, which the Sots movement mythologized. Stalin's plasticized subconscious when he announced the end of history and the beginning of the communist regime. What then? There's this painting of, I think, E.T. sitting at a table with Stalin, with Hitler looking through a curtain going shh. So something that had been sent out to the Gulag. This is the second avant-garde in the 60s in Russia. The first was in the 1915. But the Sots, and they had a great show of it, actually, at Saatchi. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. On the top floor. It was brilliant, man. It was really good. Anyhow, next thing is this book on the avant-garde icon, Russian avant-garde art and the icon painting tradition by Andrew Spira. Now, the big conclusion that I've read from that is, what is the black square? There's so much to say, but I can say it in a few seconds.
So briefly, when was the black square painted?
I don't know, 1915, 1914, that sort of time. What it is... You said it was the eye of God, and you're getting there. My belief, it's faith. And this is, I'm reading the ascetical homilies of St. Isaac the Syrian, who was a desert saint in the 7th century. And I got this through the radical human ecology movement, this book, and I sent away through the internet to a monastery in America who published this, a monk who published this. So it's basically how to become a monk. So it's asking the metaphysical how to become a spiritual person in the most extreme form, which is, i.e., as a monk, as a saint. And
Is this a difficult book to get hold of? I mean,
I don't know. You could just email this. You know,
What's the title again?
The Ascetical Homilies of St. Isaac the Syrian. But you have to go to this monastery in America to get it. It's a translation. And it's like it was written yesterday. It's just fantastic. Anyhow, what I'm up to right now, because I'm reading a page, I just tell you the thing that I'm up to now. It's about knowledge and faith.
Right.
And knowledge is, well, it's got two sides to it. There's good and bad. Whereas faith transcends knowledge. So knowledge can lead to, it's got all like conditions. Knowledge works when you do what it says you've got to do. It's like, it's all rules. If you find out all the information, you apply the knowledge, the scientific method, and it works.
Yeah.
Faith says, to hell with all of that. I'll do it without anything being true, because miracles could happen. Things can happen just through belief. And it's far, it's above nature in that sense, you know. So, but there is a way through knowledge, through a step by step. There's a three-step process, and I'm only on that bit right now, so I can't even report on that. But it breaks down a spiritual profile so accurately. There's nothing around that vaguely gets anywhere near. I suppose it must have been those times that they all had, that was all they had to talk about, spiritual stuff and the other thing. And all this. So, but it's so modern and it's so crisp and clear. Anyhow, so that is what brought me to this idea of the black square is faith, because all it is you're putting something going splat on, or somebody said he did the circle as well as the black square and the black cross. And you could say that the circle was a punctuate, a full stop on civilization. So what that's saying, black square, stop. Stop it. Reflect. Just stop for a minute. Admit no one's got a clue what life is. It's a big mystery. No one will ever know. It's just a mystery.
Right.
Let's take it from there. Let's go from there. Stop. And I don't know, I saw 1984, and something in that, the room that you go to, and the idea of the thought police, and Suzanne, and who's Collingwood, who wrote, defines the role, 30s, he wrote The Principles of Art, saying the role of the artist is to work to prevent the corruption of consciousness. So basically the role of the artist is to is a mind police kind of thing.
The thing I don't get with Malevich is the way that he then returns to almost this strange kind of folk art after having done this suprematist stuff.
That's my third book. Where's my third book? Here we go.
Let's get the volume through.
Thank you for that. What's the time? Malevich and film, this is.
But this is turning out like that. It's like a bit like that Marx Brothers scene, you know, the day at the races, where he ends up with this pile of books. And by the time...
I've got a hernia.
And then the guy keeps selling him the books. And then it turns out that he's missed the race.
Anyway. Say no more. There's a book. Also, my colleague here has got Malevich and film. Basically, why?
Okay, we've got 5 minutes.
I want to play this bit of this track if I can. This is the main point, and I could get this. I'm happy to just say this, actually. People say that his post-suprematist stuff is kind of lightweight in comparison with the earlier stuff.
Yeah.
The point being, actually, he was one of the first astronauts in his mind. He was going into outer space, Malevich, and you know, he's literally exploring it in terms of the white on white after the black square. And then it came off, he went to the architectronics onto the three-dimensional cube. And then from that, well, Robert Irwin did a similar thing in the 60s. He just went out without preconceptions. The name of his biography is Seeing Something is Forgetting the Name of the Thing You See. So it's like not working to not have preconceived ideas, essentially.
Right.
But this is, and what movies loosened up? There's one I've got is Enthusiasm. I've got the other one is, I can't think of it. I've got the two Russian films that The Earth.
Okay. So, is that Dovzhenko?
Yeah. Right. And they're fundamental ones that had impact on Malevich's practice. But basically, it gave him the freedom to return to a figurative style, because what he'd said through the black square and the thing was contained. What the world that it was opening up to was opening up to the world of the movies with broader. He called it the fourth dimension.
Right.
A broader. Well, Larry Onoff talked about the fourth dimension as well. A lot of the artists, Goncharova. But this is only just beginning to emerge, this sort of understanding. So we're just beginning to touch upon it. So it's not that well researched, so I don't know. But I'm just going to hint at it. That's all we've really got time.
It might be Podovkin. I can't remember now.
Yeah. Thank you.
Well, it's one of those, anyway.
One of those, okay. So with that, that's all really I want to do.
All right.
I wouldn't mind just sitting back to William Devon.
That's fine, but we... Okay, so you've got a film coming up. When is this film coming out?
Don't know, but it's definitely a BBC Four film. I'm hoping a feature film. I don't know, who knows?
Really? Okay.
But,
And what'll it be called?
The R&B Feeling.
And it's basically
a story of my life,
a story of Bob Parks, performance artist, and your life.
And it's focused very much around 72 in LA.
Right.
It sort of comes and what came out of that.
And your sort of quest to find the roots of R&B, Johnny Otis and all that.
Absolutely.
Stuff.
And gospel church and spirituality and
how are we going to play this Vaughan thing? Where is it?
Have you got it?
Oh, I've got it here, haven't I?
Yeah. Right, let's play it. It's a long track, so I want to sit back and take it easy on that one.
Okay.
Number nine. Bye, everybody. Thank you for listening. I love you all.
Though you may not drive a great big Cadillac, against the white walls, TV antennas in the back, you may not have a car at all. Remember, brothers and sisters, you can still stand tall. Just be thankful for what you got. Though you may not drive a great big Cadillac, diamond in the back, sun in the top, digging the scene with a gangster lead, gangster white wall, TV antennas in the back. You may not have.
Shout for Johnny. Sorry. Shout for.
Okay, right. You've been listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM with this week's guest, Bob Parks. And what that last track, Bob, who was that?
Shout for Johnny. I tell you what I saw. I saw Goldie with the Heritage Orchestra at the South Bank playing... what's his... It's something he did, anyway. It was terrific. He came to our school. Anyhow, I'll tell you that on another time.
Okay.
Johnny, thank you. Stay in touch.
Diamond in the back, sun roof top, digging the scene with a gangster lean. Diamond in the back, sun roof top, digging the scene with a gangster lean. Though you may not drive a great big Cadillac, against the white walls, TV antennas in the back, you may not have a car at all. But remember, brothers and sisters, you can still